Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to another episode of The Gary Hour. I'm your host, Gary Levitt. This week, I talk to comedian and character actress Julie Katakis. She's raising a little girl all by herself, and we talk about what that entails and what she's learned from it and how she's juggled stand-up comedy, a law degree, to become the very popular Madge the Vag character that you find online. You'll see she has more than 500,000 followers. This episode is brought to you by Future Moments, makers of mobile apps for content creation. If you're a musician, a podcaster, a filmmaker, or someone that just makes videos, go to the App Store and search for Future Moments because they have an app that'll make your life easier and make your work better. It will help the production of your video and your audio. So go to the App Store and search for Future Moments and see all the apps they have for you. Okay, thanks for listening. Check out the show notes for links to Julie's website and to her Madge the Vag character and her comedy album. And you could also leave a review. For some reason, that helps with the iTunes algorithm. So please do that. But most of all, enjoy. Your Madge the Vag character is taking off. I've been watching your characters for years now, and Madge the Vag I just saw has like more than 500,000 subscribers.
Yeah.
How do you? All right. First of all, you're a single mother. Mm-hmm. Not for long, perhaps, which we'll talk about.
Yeah, I mean, how does that work? Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
So you've been raising a daughter. Uh-huh. You've been doing stand-up comedy. Mm-hmm. You have a comedy album out.
Oh, yeah, I do, actually.
And you've been doing all these characters, and now this one character is just taking off with more than 500,000 viewers. Mm-hmm. How do you do it all?
I feel like I'm less busy than most people. I don't think you realize what you're doing when you're doing it or something. I don't know.
Because it's just easy for you?
Well, I really like doing character stuff. I would like to do more of that. Mm-hmm. But I, like the Madge thing, it is with Scary Mommy, and they have a following.
Scary Mommy is what, a web?
It's a parenting website, mm-hmm, that started off as a mom's blog and then blew up.
Right, because Madge the Vag is very informational. Mm-hmm. You actually learn things. And you get entertained.
Yeah, I mean, that's the idea. So they came up with the idea for the series and they wanted a character. And they had a different character idea. And then I just kind of gave it the personality and the voice and the mannerisms and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I improv a lot, obviously. And then I don't know. It's really fun because you just pop into it and then I just do... you know.
Do you snap into character and just lose sense of time?
I do. I have so much fun being in character. Uh-huh. I definitely prefer that to being myself. So.
Do you want to make this, do you want to turn into Madge the Badge and we'll just do this?
Then I would only have to talk about vaginas. So.
I'll learn a lot.
Yeah. But yeah, that was the idea. And so it's their best performing series, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
And
how did they find you? Did they see your other characters?
I am recommended for anything mom related. And then I sent them a video of just my different characters and videos. And I had a lot more stuff about like the vaginal area than I realized.
In your stand-up?
In my videos. I had like this one thing, a Calvin Klein commercial video I did, like a spoof with all this pubic hair coming out.
Yes.
And I did. What else? Oh, like the pee thing. I was really into pee for a while. They had like that female urination device.
So they were looking for a mother that's obsessed with the vaginal area.
I don't think they knew that would happen. We're like, this one seems on point. And then I just came in and did some like made up some ideas and jokes and things. And they were like, all right, they call me the next day. I'm like, let's do this. And I was like, oh, well, that's cool. And then, you know, I gotten to be, you know, like help write them and all that stuff. So
is this a full-time gig?
I would call it a part-time gig, and I'm paid, I would say, in a part-time fashion.
Mm-hmm.
But it is really nice to have, and I hope to see it grow more.
Yeah, I could see you're getting fans. There's like almost 1,000 comments on every video.
Yeah, people really enjoy the series, but also like they seem to like this character a lot, and they, you know, I'll see them like, oh, this reminds me of you. It helps me learn a lot about what is successful as far as a character goes, or just as a personality, even like podcast or something like that. You know, people need to relate to it in some way, even though she's wacky and weird.
Yeah,
like, oh, I'd want to have lunch with her, or I want to be her friend, or she reminds me of you. Like, I see a lot of those things. I'm like, oh, that's so interesting.
Have you thought of doing stand-up as Madge the Vag?
I have, and I would totally do that.
What if Madge the Vag takes off more than Julie
Katakis? She would, and I'm okay with that.
Are you? Would you be kind of pissed because you've been doing stand-up?
I would a little, yeah, but I'd be like, well.
Like, who is this Madge the Vag? She hasn't paid her dues.
I know. She didn't even have to do open mics.
Yeah.
It's not right. But yeah, I would be okay with whatever, I guess. I want to do a different character, but I don't think they want me to do more series.
They don't want a spinoff?
No, because they have a boob series now, and I was like, oh, let me do it. Please let me do it. I want to do it as like a 1970s or 1980s, I think. I was thinking roller skater and right. with boobs flapping around, and they're like, no more of you.
Do they think it'll take away from Madge the Vag? People be, that's be not boob the tube or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I think they were just like, we can't have you do every, you know, two. It just wouldn't. That's just not. We want different people.
Do
and
people
diversity.
Really believe that you're Madge the Vag? Like,
so I assume not. And I would think the majority of people know that it's a character. But I have seen some people not understand that.
I would definitely, I could definitely see that.
Yeah, and they really think like, you know, I am this person who just literally gets up in the morning and goes and interviews people and does that. Like, I don't think they understand that it's, you know, pre-planned and we write things out and it's
right.
got like a camera people, you know, like
it's an actual
team.
Sketch.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting. But that's, I think that's a good sign.
You're not actually just watching it. You're actually watching it through a camera that's there with a lighting crew. Like it's a production.
Yeah, it's like a, you know, but anyway, so it's all very interesting, but anyway, yeah. So.
Mm-hmm. How, and you've been raising your daughter, and how old is she now?
She just turned 8 in June.
So that's 8 successful years as a mommy.
Yeah, well, mostly successful years. We made it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 it's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
What is the hardest year?
Well, I think that's hard to say because I think every stage and year has its set of challenges and then its set of, you know, like great things. But the hardest part is the first 2 years, just because you've lost all of your independence and everything is just baby. Even, you know, I would say a full 2 years, you're really like baby zone.
Was that the biggest time of sacrifice you've had to make?
Yeah, I mean, I moved back to Pennsylvania, so it was because I was in law school and no one would. It was not only did the everything crash at that time, all the banks, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
She was born in 2010, and I was in law school, so I was also pregnant. So getting a job was almost impossible.
Right.
So I moved away from New York for like a year and then came back and then got a job as a lawyer and then tried to get back into comedy. Like it was just...
Okay, let's get into this. Let's get this sequence
down. I'll tell you exactly this.
You sequence. Remember all this?
I do.
You remember your life?
I remember. So I can't forget.
You moved to New York to pursue stand-up?
No, I moved to New York a long time ago after I was in the Peace Corps. Yes, I was in the Peace Corps in Cameroon outside of, right after college. And then I wanted to live in New York City, so I found a job here.
Wait, why did you join the Peace Corps?
I always wanted to work internationally, and and I had some skill sets as far as language goes, and I wanted to foster those. And I had originally wanted to work internationally. Like, my goal is to be, like, some kind of international, I don't know, worker in the nonprofit sector or something like that.
This was after high school, I imagine?
Yeah.
Did you go to college?
Yeah, I did.
Obviously, you went to law school.
And I traveled a lot in college.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, I want to work internationally. I love learning languages. I'm good at that. And
what did you study in college?
Political science. Oh, no. In college, political science. Yeah.
Okay. So, and you don't want to be a politician?
No. I forget. Why did I change it to political science? I don't know. Anyway, so I was journalism and political science. I had a minor in journalism. And then I decided to do the Peace Corps. And then from there, I came back and the first job, it was a tough time for job. Every time I'm looking for a job, there's like a dip
in
job availability, whatever that means. So I worked at a nonprofit. Anyway, and then I was a teacher for a little while. And then I got into stand-up, but I didn't get into stand-up until law school. So many years
later. So you're
later.
Living in New York. You were living in New York for a few years after the Peace Corps.
Yeah.
And were you just kind of figuring out what you wanted to do with your life?
Yeah, I was like, well, I think I wasn't sure. I couldn't find something I really enjoyed. And in that time, I remember I took like an improv class once just for fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then, in that time, I remember I was thinking of taking a stand-up comedy class.
Right.
And then I went to drop in the class and I had a bad experience. Because the teacher just sent me up. I had no prepared material. So I just started. It was just not.
Wait, you took a stand-up comedy class and they just had you go up with nothing prepared?
I wasn't even sure I was going to take the class. He was like, come by and you can observe. And I was like, oh, cool. So I came by and he just sends me up. And I was like, I just remember I stole a joke because I was trying to think of anything.
Right.
And then I said some things and there's a little hee hee ha. And I remember a couple of guys were like, oh, hey, you're a stripper, take your clothes off. And this is in a class.
In the class? Oh,
yeah,
no.
It was so weird. And
well,
I,
the class is there to learn what you're going to deal with in the real world.
Oh,
right?
I guess so. And then I was like, I don't like the stand-up thing. This was, I don't know, it made me uncomfortable. Isn't that funny? So then I never touched it again until law school.
So you went to law school. What kind of law, kind of lawyer did you want to be?
I wanted to be an international lawyer, but it's a lot harder to do. It's not very easy to get into international sector. So, and it wasn't really an international law school. In any case.
You set your sights so high and ended up so low, Julie.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it did not work out at all. So,
did you finish law school?
I did. I got pregnant in my third year. I'd already decided in the second year. I was like, I really don't want to be a lawyer. And then I remember between my second and third year, I decided to take a stand-up comedy class on the Upper East Side at the Comic Strip.
A real one, not just a...
Yes, a real one. I actually paid for it and took it. It was at D.F. Swedler was the teacher.
Uh-huh.
He's quite a staple up there. And I really enjoyed the class. And then I had to do the graduation show at the end. And we had to invite people and I refused. I was too embarrassed. I didn't want anyone to know I was doing it.
Right.
And then I did my set and it went... Well, consider, I mean, well, relatively speaking, surely. I'm sure it wasn't great. And then I did a couple more shows. And then after my third show, I got pregnant. And I kept doing it. And I was doing stand-up pregnant for a little while.
Were you, how did you know you loved it?
Oh, well,
like, what made you keep doing it?
You know, it's funny because I remember I had no intentions of doing stand-up. What I wanted was to just learn how to write funny things. I just wanted to be a writer, like a funny writer. But when I went up for my first show and I heard, you know, they're laughing, and I was like, huh, that feels cool. I mean, that's what they say, right? You get one laugh, you start chasing that laughter, that high.
Yep, the buzz.
So that's why a lot of people who aren't good at it stay in it, because you're like, well, I got laughs that one time, and you just keep chasing that.
Yeah, a lot of people do well the first time and then bomb after that for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, even, you know, as long as you get one, you just remember that feeling. So, you know, in my mind and memory, they laughed at everything, and I'm sure that they didn't. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they laughed at like three things that I said, but I felt great about it. And then, and I liked the community of it. Like I had a new set of friends.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just something new and challenging and fun that I was like, oh, I really like doing this. And so I kept doing these shows at the comic strip, and I would get asked to do shows from the people that I was meeting. And I was like, oh, it's so fun. And when I got pregnant, it was a great way to deal with the things that were going on.
Right. Talk them out on stage.
Yeah.
Make jokes.
And you don't realize, I remember, well, in any case, I was talking about my pregnancy, but I wasn't speaking honestly about it. And I was like, I can actually say things without telling people exactly what's going on. So it's kind of getting it off my chest, even though, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not getting down to the truth here. And it made me an interesting person, I think. I felt interesting because people are like, oh my gosh, you're pregnant and doing stand up. And I was like, oh yeah, this is kind of interesting. I won't have this forever. I might as well enjoy it. You
That's
know?
One way to stand out.
Yeah. At first I was hiding it. And I was like, I'm just going to make, and I it was really fun having this kind of thing to joke about and, you know, people wondering what's going on, but everybody's afraid to ask me and just kind of laughing with me. So it felt supportive in that way.
Was your daughter on Immaculate Conception?
Yes. That's exactly what it was. No, not exactly. I think, what did I say? I was making jokes like, I don't even know who the dad is, which of course I know, but I was really putting it out there as if I didn't know.
Are you in touch with him?
Not at all, no.
So your daughter's not in touch?
No, no. That was a very difficult situation, and I wasn't really, how to say it? Like,
Yeah, that must be tricky, because at some point she's going to realize that a lot of other peers of hers have mommies and daddies.
Yeah, she did very early on in daycare. She was asking me about it.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, as I get older, you can say more and more, and now she knows. With the exception of exactly how it happened, she knows there was a dad mm-hmm. who's not in our lives. And, you know, that's, you know, part of who she is.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's not going to be who's in her life. And that's kind of, she seems to have accepted it at this stage and understand it.
Did you have an answer prepared? You must have known she was going to ask at some point.
Yeah, like I would kind of prepare stuff, but you just cannot be totally prepared, and you can't know every question they're going to ask.
Mm-hmm.
So it is hard.
Is that what the improv class kind of paid off a little bit?
Yeah, I think I did zip, zap, zop to her, and I was like, and that's how it happened.
Zip, zap, no daddy's up.
Yeah. She's like, oh, okay, zip, zap. Yeah, I mean, it's hard, and certain parts of it, you know, because it didn't happen in the most comfortable way, the pregnancy, that's not something I'll share with her until much, much adult time later.
Oh, and not in a comfortable way. It sounds like a huge euphemism for... non-consensual.
So, to a certain extent, yeah, it was one of those weird things where weird things happen, and it was very weird.
Does this guy know that?
Yeah.
He does.
Yes. So again, I was in law school, and I knew enough that I didn't want to be in a situation where I didn't tell him, and then he later find out, and that's held against me. And I also, because in court, that wouldn't be okay.
What wouldn't be okay?
That I had his child
mm-hmm.
and never informed him of this. So that wouldn't look good on me.
Was it non-consensual?
The situation was that we were friends, and we had had two experiences in the past where... we were intimate, but he didn't want to use condoms, so mm-hmm. I did not become intimate with him,
mm-hmm.
and we stopped talking. You know, I told him I wasn't interested and all this stuff, and then he kind of just left me alone, and then he came to one of my very first comedy shows, the third one, which was funny. It was a bringer show, and so...
Oh, he brought it.
And he brought... So he came, and... I was so happy that I had people coming that I didn't care who it was.
Right.
That's comedy for you.
Yes.
And then afterwards, we all went out to eat, and you know, he was talking about he'd fallen in love with his, like, he reunited with the love of his life. And I was like, oh, cool, he's not interested in me anymore. And I'd felt badly for having rejected him. And I was just like, hey, do you want to talk about it? And we had, like, I only remember, you know, the way that I remember this was a couple glasses of wine and, like, a beer. And somehow I just blacked out and I didn't remember anything.
Oh, wow.
And so the next day I realized what happened. I was like, oh, God. I'm sure that, you know, he didn't use a condom.
You woke up the next day and he wasn't there.
He was there and I knew what happened. I was like, oh, wow. I mean, you know, when you're both
naked
in bed.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, my God, how'd that happen? And it was a weird, it was all weird because I didn't drink much and I'm not a blackout person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I ate a bunch of food too. So it was just all weird. And
do you think he possibly roofied?
You know, when I've talked about this, people always do throw that out there. And it's always possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember he went out and he got beer. And then I just had like a couple sips of beer and I went to the bathroom and I came back. And then after I had a little bit more beer, I remember blacking out. So yes, it is always a possibility that someone would do something that grotesque. But it's very hard for me to say, it has to be what happened. I don't know. And
I know this exact feeling because it happened to me one night. My old band was on tour.
Uh-huh.
And we all three of us, our last memory was watching like some weird sci-fi movie that the guy that was putting us up.
Uh-huh.
And then we all woke up the next morning in separate sleeping bags.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, what happened last night? I don't remember getting into bed. I don't remember anything. We all had the exact same last memory.
Yeah, I mean, people do weird things, mm-hmm. right? It's so possible, but you don't know. And you're like, well, maybe it's somebody. Now, you had a group experience, so at least you can sort of confirm the weirdness of it. But, you know, like if I said it to someone, they'd be like, well, you drink, things happen. Alcohol affects everybody differently. And I was like, that's true. I don't know. And I remember obsessing over it and looking online and being like, well, how do these things affect you? And, you know, by that, it certainly could have been. But it also certainly may not have been. I have no idea.
Right.
And, you know, so in my mind, I was just like, I just knew it felt weird. And then I shortly thereafter found out I was pregnant and I knew it was him because I wasn't having sex with anybody else at the time.
That morning, did you ask him, tell him?
No,
you don't
remember? I kind of hurriedly got him out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, because you're probably freaked out that you don't remember the night.
Yeah, and it just, nothing really sinks in necessarily right when things happen. Well, at least in that moment, I just remember thinking, oh my God, I can't even have two glasses of wine anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is that what this has come to? And I didn't for one second think, oh God, what if I'm pregnant? In my head, I just thought, oh God, I'm probably not going to be pregnant, but one time, what's the likelihood? But certainly he has a million STDs. He clearly does not like condoms.
Right.
So I was very worried about STDs.
Big red flag there.
Yeah. And this
I don't
was
like to wear condoms.
No, it was literally something he just did not do, mm-hmm. which was clear in the two times that we'd hung out before. And I was like, oh, Sky is a very weird aversion to it. Maybe he couldn't use them. It didn't work for, who knows?
He's allergic to latex.
Some people certainly say that. But yeah, I remember like, I think the next Friday I went on a date. And I was like, I'm not having anything to drink just in case, like, I cannot handle liquor anymore or something.
Mm-hmm.
So it certainly wasn't my normal pattern to just black out. It certainly wasn't. And I remember that guy, he, like, wanted to kiss me. And I was like, oh, I'm not really. And then he was like, maybe if you drink, you'd loosen up a little bit. And I remember just feeling like, oh, okay, no more dating.
Yeah.
After that, I was like, that's it. And then I found out I was pregnant. And I was devastated, and because I didn't even really like the guy. You know, at that point, I at most thought of him as a friend, but mm-hmm. certainly no one I would want to be with. So, I don't know. I remember I called my brother. He made me feel much better. And then the next day, I went to an actual clinic. I don't know. And I started to feel good about it, oddly, like, okay, I could have a baby. So I was like, all right, this is feeling good personally, but I still have to deal with this guy. And so I did tell him, of course, he didn't want me to have it. And I was like, well, you don't have to do anything, but I feel obligated to tell you.
Right.
And, you know, so What I mean to say is I knew I felt weird about it, but I just didn't let myself get into the mindset of it. And mm-hmm. then when he was involved, that's when it started to get more uncomfortable for me in the way that he was treating me. And you know, I hated if he even tried to touch me. It just all made me really uncomfortable. So
was he trying to like touch you and comfort you and like be your boyfriend?
He definitely wanted to. He was like, you can't have sex with other people. We have to live together.
He was saying all this.
Yeah. And he's like, now we really don't have to use condoms. You know, just weird Whoa. Stuff that was just completely inappropriate and no awareness at all. And I let him come to the doctor with me in the beginning. And in the beginning, when you go, they take like vials and vials of blood to check you for everything when you're pregnant. And he was like, you know, Jewel, and I don't think he went to that one. That's right. And he was like, why didn't you have me come to that? And I was like, well, there was no reason for you to come. They just took my blood. And he's like, they should be taking my blood too. This is my baby. I was like, no, they shouldn't be taking your blood. This has nothing to do with you. You're not the one with the baby in you.
Yeah.
Even if you were my husband, they wouldn't take your blood. What are you talking about? So he came to the next one and came in the room and I had to change into, you know, this whatever dress thing. Mm-hmm. And I made him leave so I could change. He's like, just so you know, next time I'm staying. And if you have to get naked in front of me, you're getting naked in front of me. And
I
so
do not like this guy.
Yeah. So he was just very possessive and controlling. So, which actually I didn't know he was like that. So then one day I think I was just, I don't know. I just asked him, I was like, what happened that night? I don't know. Because he didn't understand.
You asked him that in the doctor's office.
No, not at the doctor's office. We were, I don't know, near my apartment. I don't know. We were taking a walk or something. Because he was trying to understand why I didn't want him to be around me. And I was like, I don't know what happened that night. I have no recollection.
Right.
And it makes me uncomfortable not knowing. And he's like, oh, well, I remember everything. I was fine. And then he just said, like, I had two condoms and I just didn't use them. And I was like, you know, why would you have done that to me? You knew how I felt about that. I don't understand. You knew I didn't know what I was doing. And, you know, he was just like, oh, I don't know. He just didn't care. And so we parted ways that night and I went home and it just all kind of sunk in and it all felt horrible. And I was very close to just not having the baby at that mm-hmm. point. Because everyone was like, don't do it. Why are you doing it? Even at the hospital, they're like, are you sure you want to do this? You don't have to do this.
Wow.
I was like, yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm fine. And, you know, even strangers were literally like, why would you have it? Are you religious?
Right.
Because a lot of people knew him and knew what was going on. So everyone in our neighborhood was just like, well, he didn't live in our neighborhood, but he worked nearby. Anyway, so...
And it sounds like kind of the worst possible time.
Yeah, it was all bad.
You're about finished with law school.
Yeah, it was a really bad time. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have a real job, you know, so...
You just started stand-up.
That was the... I was like, oh, I just started. Come on. But actually, I think it ended up making me more interesting as a stand-up, so... Mm-hmm. But I had to take a break afterwards. But after I had her for like 2 years, and then I went back to it. A friend of mine was like, you know, just take control of it. If you want to have it, you have it, but you set the rules. And I was like, that's true.
Had you thought before that you wanted to have a baby?
No, it's funny. Right before that, I remember thinking, you know what? I really don't want to have a baby. Because my friends were starting to have babies at this time.
Right.
And I was like, you know what? I don't even want to do that. I definitely want to wait till like, I don't know, in a decade. And then if I can't have one, I'll just adopt or something. Like, how nice is that? Mm-hmm. That was what I decided.
Right.
And then it ended up happening. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, and I remember I messaged him. I was like, don't contact me anymore unless it has to do with the baby. I'll let you know when she's born. But that's that. And
did he listen to that?
He actually did not respond to that. And I think once later, maybe he, I forget. It's hard. This part's unclear. I remember either he emailed me or he texted me when he saw me walking down the street and something inappropriate. It wasn't like normal and something like, "Ooh, you look really good. Wow." You know, just, I was like, ugh. Anyway. And then
this guy just sounds just so unaware. Clueless.
So clueless and unaware. And so I sent him this long email to track everything to make sure it was like stated. So he couldn't come back at me like, oh, you're lying and hiding that, you know.
No, you're studying law. Were you ever concerned legally that he can take some sort of action?
Yeah. So that's why I was being as careful as possible. I knew I spoke to a lawyer. he has no right to come to my doctor's appointments. There was no reason for us to communicate. So that's why I was like, I need to not have him, you know, bother me right now.
Right.
When the baby comes, it's a different story.
Mm.
And I went to a family law attorney and he was like, oh, this guy will never bother you. I was like, oh, no, no. He says he's definitely. And he's like, no, he won't. Trust me. And he didn't.
The family lawyer knew that.
Yeah. He had seen it so many times.
Really? Yeah. So he didn't know that the family lawyer didn't know the guy.
No. I just told him a very brief story of what, you know, this person.
And he's seen this pattern several times.
Yeah.
Before.
Yeah. Because what the father was saying was like, I don't want to pay you child support. I don't want it to go to you. It should only go to the kid. And I was like, well, you know, it's for rent and food, but you know, it's not like I'm. And I was like, whatever. And he was like, I don't even report my true income. So good luck with getting much from me. I was like, oh, well, thanks for telling me that.
Wow.
Anyway, yeah. So I think I told the lawyer those things. He's like, oh, trust me. He's not going to bug you. And he didn't. I let him know and he just responded with a quick word of congratulation. And then that was it.
Congratulations.
Sean.
He didn't even spell check.
No.
You told him that you just gave birth to
yeah,
a baby
I told
girl.
Him the name and all that. And I'm sure he wasn't happy because he did not like that she wouldn't have his last name. And I was like, who cares? We're not married. So, you know, what's
he's
the
like,
matter?
Oh, it's not twins. So I guess I write congratulations.
Sean. I was like, ugh. Oh my God. I'm never going to forget that. And then I think he contacted me about a year and 1 month later. Yeah, because he wished her a happy birthday. Wrong name, though. He got the name wrong.
He had the name wrong. Did he have the birthday right?
No, it was 1 month off.
Right.
It was a month late. And then he was asking dumb questions because I was like, all right, I feel better about everything, you know. I went to a therapist when I was pregnant. I was like, please get me over this. I have all this hate in my heart. This person's supposed to be in my life. And she was like, whoa, why are you even letting him in your life? And then she's, you know, we talked about it. She's like, the best case scenario is this guy took advantage of you. The worst case scenario is that he actually drugged you and raped you,
mm-hmm.
you know,
right.
with, you know, this, with that, like with purpose. And she's like, this guy is not worth your time. And, you know, whatever, you're giving him too much benefit of the doubt here. Anyway, so after a year, I was just like, I think I got over all of the hatred and stuff that I had inside me. And so when he messaged, I was like, well, you know, would you be interested in meeting her? And he was like, yeah, does she know what I look like? And did she, you know, all these kind of dumb questions. Or I was like, she's no, you know, does she have my last name? I was like, no, you know. And he's like, well, maybe I could hang out with her on occasion. I was like, oh. So I was like, do me a favor, go file for paternity. And then when I see you're serious, we'll do it. And he was like, well, I'm not, that's too much work. It's a hassle.
So you had decided at some point to let him in.
I was going to.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, just to let me know that you're serious,
mm-hmm.
that you're not just going to hang out with her, as you call it, on your time when you feel like it for a couple hours here or there.
Right.
That you're committed to being a father.
Right. Be a father or nothing.
Yeah. I was like, I need to see some commitment here. That's why I didn't put him on the birth certificate, mm-hmm. which he would have had to sign anyway, which, you know, but I wanted him to actually show some level of commitment.
Right.
Which filing for paternity is not that hard.
Mm-hmm.
But he was like, I don't feel like it. Can you do that? And I was like, no. You know, let me know when you do it. And then we'll set up a meeting. This way, at least I know that you will be committed to being a father. And you're not
right.
just going to skip.
Because even at that age and inexperience for you, you
yeah.
knew that it wouldn't be fair to your daughter to have this guy.
I didn't
come
want
and
that.
Go.
I didn't want. I just felt like that's got to be the worst thing in the world. I mean, my parents were always divorced, and although my dad could be very flippy floppy, he was consistently there every other weekend,
mm-hmm.
and you know, that meant something. Like it's better than nothing. That's,
right.
Or just like showing up here and there. And I know for some people might say, well, a father is better than nothing at all, but also forcing someone to be there that just skips out on you. I know too many people who have that situation. And
yeah. And like not being able to rely on the person.
Yeah. And I mean, in truth, in my view, this was a horrible person.
Yeah.
That is selfish and highly immature, and who knows what he would communicate to her or do or be like. And so I needed some kind of, you know, guarantee that he was mature enough to just file some paperwork.
But he knew that if you filed that paternity paperwork, he'd have to pay.
Yeah, and that was a thing. I was like, this is not something I could handle out of court. Like, I would want to just set up so we would communicate as little as possible.
Right.
And he didn't want to deal with that at all. He didn't want to pay for it.
Did you want and or need his financial assistance?
Oh, I could have really used it, but I was okay without it. And that was what I want. I didn't care about his money, but, you know, if I had gotten, at the time, I think it would have been an extra $600 or $800 a month, mm-hmm. plus help with half of the daycare. It would have been really helpful.
Yeah, I bet.
But I figured it out. And, you know, if I really needed help, I had my parents, like, you know, worst comes worse. But I was actually okay. I was focused and I prioritized and I got it done.
And it sounds like the stress of dealing with this guy would have been,
I think, much worse than some financial stress, you know. And
you would have had to pay for another therapist and then one for your daughter
would be in therapy. And I honestly thought he might be here, but he'll never pay a dime, the way he was not happy about that, or just harass me about it, or, you know, I was like, I just don't think so.
Yeah.
And he could see, still has my phone number and can find me. So there he is.
Like, does she ask about him regularly?
No. She talks about it very matter of factly and is, you know, just, I mean, what can she, how did, you know, I'm sure she would love to have her real father,
mm-hmm.
but she's also got so much support from me and her family, mm-hmm. you know, my brother and her grandparents, that I think she feels quite secure.
Now, you probably know a bit about this coming from divorced parents, mm-hmm. but how do you juggle that? Because you don't want to tell your daughter that she comes from the spawn of an ass.
I know, so I don't say that.
Right.
And that's the thing. Like, you don't want to tell someone he's a monster.
Right. Your dad's a monster, but...
So I've never said anything negative about him. Mm-hmm. I've also never said anything positive about him. Mm-hmm. I've only been very matter of fact about who he is.
Mm-hmm. So how do you word that?
You know, what I've said is he and I did not work out.
Uh-huh.
And because of that, we thought it was best that, you know, that we don't stay together. And he decided, you know, to leave us alone or something like that. Actually, well, that makes him look great. That's kind of nice.
Do you think she feels any rejection?
I hope not. That's why I'm trying to not paint it that way. Mm-hmm.
That's a tricky situation, because either she feels rejection or she feels protected by you because he's an asshole.
Well, you know, as we go right now, I don't think she feels that,
mm-hmm.
because she doesn't quite understand. Like, she doesn't quite understand the whole process or what's going on. And I've explained, like, we know divorced parents.
She's 8 years old now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've said to her, you know how, you know, Claire and her, you know, they're divorced. Well, you know, so they see each other differently. You know, like, I tried to explain those types of things and how, you know, family structures change as a result of those things. And she seems okay. And I'm sure it will become more and more of a thing and she'll question things more. But, you know, what I'll want her to know is that it's what I've always tried to explain is, like, you don't need something labeled dad. What you need is just strong family.
A lot of love.
Yeah. And you have all these great men in your life. And now I am engaged and we all live together. And what she did do is start calling him daddy very quickly, which he was into. I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, let's slow down. And I would talk to her about it a lot. Like, I know you're excited to have that. I get it. But, you know, the great thing about your position is you get to choose who your daddy is. And this is our choice together. Like, let's see first. Make him earn it, you know?
This is a good lesson.
Yeah. But she was like, well, you know, I see all that, but I do want to call him that. And I was like, I asked her not to. And she's like, nope, I'm going to do it. And I was like, okay. But you do understand, maybe it's early. What if I choose not to? And she's like, all I need is you. But I like calling him dad.
Right. And this was like on the third date?
No. At least I knew better than to do it that soon. Oh, gosh. Yeah, it was like shortly after we all lived together.
Right.
So she was...
Was that the first guy you've lived with?
Oh, yeah. That's the first guy she's ever met. Anyone else I've dated didn't get far enough.
Mm-hmm.
And this one had gotten far enough and he met her and I was like, oh. But I didn't introduce... I just thought, that's a friend, you know. And then it kind of got better and better. And I was like, all right. And so.
How long have you been living together?
A year.
That's a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little, you get to know, really get to know someone living with them.
You do. It's hard though. I mean, it's good.
Yeah.
But it is hard when you haven't been in real relationships forever. I have not. I am not a relationship person.
Right. Is this your longest?
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. It's the most serious. I have been super single for a very long time. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. I always think that it is, I mean, obviously it's hard to live with someone, but I do think it's probably good to make sure that we don't get too stuck in our ways because we're all kind of prone to become kind of OCD. Like, no, I need this thing here. I need this thing. No, you can't have that thing there. And then like you get kind of uptight and you become crazy old person.
I honestly think if not for my kid, I wouldn't have lasted.
Mm.
But for one...
What do you mean you wouldn't have lasted?
Because I am very... As I said, I am not a relationship person. So at any sign of discord or uncomfortability, right. I have always run for the hills.
Now that is... They say that this is from coming from a divorced family.
Yeah, I know, right?
When you come from divorced families, your odds of you not being in a relationship or getting divorced yourself go way up.
Way up.
Yeah.
And so that's been my nature. My brother, who's 6 years older than me, he has always been a relationship guy, which is kind of weird. And I went the opposite way.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder just maybe personality-wise or who knows, maybe men have a bit of a different reaction sometimes.
He's 6 years older?
He's 6 years older. Okay. So he was in a family construct for longer, but not that much longer than me. So I don't know.
Well, it must have been at least 6 years longer, right?
Well, yeah, it was 6 years longer, but he was still young. It wasn't like they divorced like not long after I was born.
Right.
So it's not like
how old were you when they divorced?
They started separating at my birth.
It was their farewell.
Yeah, I was like,
conception.
Oh, this is it for me. I was the last straw. So not too long after me did they stop being together. As far as I know, I would say at most I was two. So
yeah, I mean, I'm not a psychologist.
Yeah,
I just play one on a podcast.
No, yeah, I would love to hear your thoughts.
But maybe 6 years is long enough as far as the formative years to get that family, that nuclear family security, where he could see your mom and dad together,
maybe
peacefully enough.
You know, and it's true. So I grew up seeing my mom always alone,
right?
And she rarely dated in the beginning and then it stopped. And I was like, oh, well, this seems very simple and easy. Like, I never felt the need.
She doesn't have to answer to anybody.
No, I think I like that. And I also was kind of like, well, I definitely never wanted to get married. I always thought it was stupid. That's from being from a divorced family, obviously. Mm-hmm. But
well, because you don't see the benefits of it.
Yeah. And I spent a lot of time at home with my mom, whereas my brother was out and about all the time. So I think I just really did take that in as like, oh, this is what one should do.
Mm-hmm.
So that probably has to do with it. And I hated the fight. I don't like the fighting stuff. So
do you think that might have dictated the men that you're attracted to? Like maybe you're attracted to men that you know subconsciously aren't going to work out?
Oh, I know for sure. Every guy, it took me a while to come to that realization, which seems so obvious, but everyone I dated was emotionally detached. And I am, which I didn't realize. So I was attracted to people that were like me, and neither of us, even if we really both liked each other,
right,
could never get there or say it or be vulnerable enough for anything to progress.
Right.
So it would always end up staying casual, and I would internalize it as constant rejection, and they were internalizing my behavior as rejection. You know, it would always just... There was just no hope, really.
Right. So what is this process that you went through to make yourself more vulnerable and less
for this,
detached?
Right? Yeah, I don't know. That's the thing. So this person, my fiancé, he is...
See, that's the why it's good to just get married. Because fiancé is just... It's an awkward phase.
So French and arrogant.
It is.
It's so awful. But he's a relationship person, and we met, and he was always very vulnerable with me and open to saying, oh, I really like you. I'd like to see you again. I'd like to do this with you. And if ever I withdrew a little bit, he was just cool with it. He was like, oh, okay, well, let me know when it's good for you.
Mm.
And that made all the difference, and it went slowly in the first year, really.
But he must have pulled you a little bit.
He pulled me in, or he would contact me, and, you know, he would throw stuff out there, but he would never push it in a way that would make me walk away or, you know, withdraw. And then I would be like, yeah, you know what? I like hanging out with this guy. And we always had fun together. And it was always just like, he's a good compliment to me. Mm-hmm. I'm antisocial. He's social. So, and he introduced me to a lot of fun stuff. And he was just very nice and good and kind. And, you know,
you're like, what is this strange?
Yeah. He didn't not text. He'd always text back, but not over text. Or, you know, it was always either one or the other thing. Mm-hmm. You know, the extreme of not being there to being overbearing. And he just was kind of letting me sort of lead it, but be, you know, make himself available.
You never felt like he was playing games or anything?
No, never. No.
Did you feel that with past date
guys? Oh, all the time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was either like, well, why would you? They would be like, hey, wanna blah, blah, blah. And then just not respond. You know, those really weird things that people do.
But when he would come forward and make himself vulnerable and you would kind of emotionally detach, now there must be a time where he has to let you do your thing, but he also has to at some point be like, I feel like you're pulling back right now.
Yeah, he's communicates. Mm-hmm. And so he would let me know how he's feeling, and I was able to respond to that. And then,
did you feel like new sparks in your brain? Yeah. Kicking new places?
I was like, oh, okay. That's new. No one's ever talked to me about it.
Right.
And then when I was unhappy with stuff, it would take me a while to maybe express it. But when I did, his reactions were always good. So
it shows a lot of security and a well-balanced ego on his part.
Yeah. So like if I had an issue, you know, I'd be, another thing is like growing up with my mom, who's an alcoholic, you have that fear of confrontation. Like everything for me has always been avoiding it.
Right.
I would rather just never talk to someone again than say, hey, I don't like what you're doing right now. Right. That's kind of how I've always been. So again, like any discord, I'm like, well, I'm out of here. So, you know, he would make me say whatever is upsetting me. And then he, instead of responding in the way that I thought he would, which would be this big argument or, you know, negatively, or like, you're wrong, like, what do they call that? The gaslighting thing, or you're crazy. Or he'd respond really well. And he'd be like, oh, I see. Okay. So when I do that, you know, so, and we would talk about it and it would always go well. And I was like, huh.
Rather than taking different sides and throwing arrows, you're on the same side discussing.
Yeah. We're both like, oh yeah, I did. That's true. That wasn't right. And then I would always be like, you know, right, I was being selfish when I was doing that. You know, we would always come to this kind of good place afterwards. And I was like, huh.
Yeah. You know, psychology, communication 101 is to always just say how you feel.
Yes.
So you're not like, you do this and you're that and you're that. You're like, well, I feel this way when this happens and I feel that way.
It's true. And I, you know, I realized that I have a lot more skills in that world than I thought. Mm-hmm. And I, again, having a kid, she has taught me a lot in the ways of love, if that makes sense.
Well, can you describe that?
Sure. Like I think she's kind of taught me what it means to love someone. Hmm. So I know it's not a romantic love.
Because kids don't have all those constructs. No. They just love you.
They just love you. And when they're mad at you. And, you know, when they say what they say. And, you know, as a mother who's in love with her daughter, you know, when I get mad at her, I'm explaining, you know, it's not like I would be like, well, that's it. I'm just going to leave because I don't, you know, I'm mad at you. So I was forced to, you know, deal with everything, which came naturally. It's not like I had to struggle with that. But, you know, I explain, like, just because I'm mad at you right now doesn't mean I don't love you. And so I'm hearing myself say all these kinds of things and realize, like, oh, this was what good, healthy love is, you know? You learn to love each other and explain and apologize. I've apologized to her when maybe I overreacted or I didn't stick up for her for some situation. And we talk about it. And then she said to me, like, you know, when you yell at me, you know, it's okay because I know that you love me. And I'm like, right, yeah, that's what. So you can fight. And it doesn't mean you should run away and that everything's, you know, it's all good lessons. And but also how teaching her, like, what's the right reaction? You know, she's taught me a lot. And I think about her a lot when I'm in, you know, like, just when it comes to being an adult in a relationship. And also with her there, there's more at stake. So I'm far more thoughtful about what's my next move going to be. Right. Am I going to just walk away? No, this is real. And I have to think to myself first, like, why are you really mad? Why are you feeling this way? You know, all that stuff.
Yeah. And so it sounds like it's interesting because all relationships are helpful with love relationships, romantic relationships. Like I've always said, being in bands has really helped me with love relationships.
Right.
Because it's a lot of compromise and you're kind of stuck together.
Yeah, and you have to work it out.
You just have to work it out.
Right.
Because you have a show coming up. You have rehearsals. You're just going to be together.
Right.
So it sounds like your daughter kind of really kind of helped you evolve.
Yeah, I really think so.
Mm-hmm.
And she's made me pickier about who I would spend time with. And, you know, she's been very good for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, all that, like, you know, you can't just, my instincts were, which was always walking away, I couldn't do anymore.
What's your fiance's name?
Joshua.
Joshua?
Mm-hmm.
If you had met Joshua, say, 6 years ago, do you think it would have worked out?
No, because I would have taken the slightest thing and just gotten out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who knows? Maybe it would have. Maybe I would have. Maybe he would have pursued it and it would have just taken forever.
Six more years.
So I don't want to say absolutely not.
Julie, we've been dating for 6 years. Yeah. I think we should move in.
Right. Really? It's so soon. Do we really know each other? Maybe it would have, absolutely.
We only go on a date once a year. It's too soon.
Yeah. I've been saying it's too soon for too long. Yeah, I mean, who knows? I wonder that too. I'm like, what if we had met before her? Well, what would it have been like? Would I have stuck around? Because I just don't. And I also have used her as a reason not to stick around, though, with people, too.
Why? Because they're good boyfriends but terrible parents?
No, I think sometimes I use her as an excuse to just not be with people or to not date, or I have in the past. So,
right.
If, you know...
It's a rational out.
Right. So I was like, well, you know, I have so much going on here. And when you're, at least in my situation where it was just the two of us, we have such wonderful intimacy, like hugging and cuddling. And it makes you not feel lonely. Well, I didn't feel lonely.
Right.
I never felt lonely.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, all I need men for are, you know, just sex. And then I can do that at my lunch break. And
I'm not
really
a crazy cat lady. I'm a crazy daughter lady.
Yeah. That's probably true. I'd collect a bunch of Reyes if I could. But yeah, I really think like I never felt lonely. I was like, I'm not lonely at all. I definitely wanted to have, I only felt like, oh, you should, you know, don't not have sex though. That's bad. Cause I know women who get stuck in that too. And they will go for years
without having sex.
Yeah. And then it just, and then it's hard to get back to that world again. And that's not healthy, you know?
Yeah, a lot of that too is just like physical touch is so important.
Right. Well, that's what I was saying. Like, because when you have a kid, you're hugging a lot and you're cuddling a lot. And I felt like it's a different touch, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it kind of, and I wonder if this happens in marriages where it sort of replaces that need for physical, because you know, that's the downfall oftentimes. So I wonder that a lot.
Oh, that's an interesting point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe couples shouldn't even get pets either.
Well, they have teared, I've heard this, like dogs that sleep in your bed and stuff tear the couples apart.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's weird on several levels because then you don't want to have sex in front of your dog.
Oh, I have though.
Yeah. Is that weird?
You know, it isn't unless they're staring, which my dog does not. But in the beginning, whenever I would get close with someone or we would start kissing, she would jump up.
Uh-huh.
And start licking too, or she would think we're playing.
Right, right.
She didn't understand.
And like, this is approaching a threesome bestiality.
Yeah.
Bestiality threesome.
She was like, oh, they're playing. Let me jump in. So she learned, obviously.
Yeah.
You can't do that. But if you look over and a dog's just like staring at you, that's when it's a little, weird.
I think that's really, really quite beautiful, actually, that you learn to have romantic love through the pure love of raising your daughter.
Yeah. Why can't, you know, I was always confused by it because I would think like, why is this so easy for me? I'm doing all the right things with her. And I was like, why can't I be like that in romantic situations? Because romantically, I was just so stressed out constantly.
Right. Well, we subconsciously repeat the patterns of our parents.
True. And that's a very good point. That's exactly what it is. It's that, what was I learning about? There's like a thing where anyway, yeah, when you learn that love is at a young age, if you learn that it's about feeling stressed out or not constant or not, you know, definite, then you assume that those feelings are what love is to you later in life. So you think you love someone, but you're not really loving that person. You're right. Just, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I was used to conflict. I come from a mm-hmm. divorced family. I always thought love had to be full of conflict.
Yeah. Which.
And it really doesn't. There's enough conflict in life.
Right.
But then when you enter a relationship, that's what you think love is, you mm-hmm. enter a relationship and there's no conflict. You're like, something's wrong.
Right. It doesn't feel right. You're like, I must not. I was like, I don't really, you know, I don't feel that stuff. So this is not someone I like.
Yeah. And you're like, wait, where did that stuff come from?
Right. And you assume that, well, that's what it means to love, right? Isn't that? And then someone's like, no, it really is not.
So it must be tricky, though. So you're like, all right, Joshua's a good boyfriend. Mm-hmm. How do you know he's going to be a good parent?
Yeah. And it's that's the whole thing.
Yeah. How do you just see them together?
Well, there's a lot of work. So in the beginning, you know, there's both. It was good, you know, and we've had issues where, you know, I've felt like I had to talk to him about, like, well, here's your role right now. Mm-hmm. We actually revisited it recently. And it's a very hard role for someone to come into a family. Mm-hmm. And I think on one hand, where it's a divorced family and, you know, there is a father, that's a different situation because kids are extremely possessive mm-hmm. of their parents mm-hmm. and they don't welcome intrusion. Right. Mm-hmm. So, here there is not a father, but that doesn't make it any easier. So she's not.
I think it does, actually. I only say this because mm-hmm. I have divorced family and step-parents on both sides.
Okay.
It's just one less thing he has to maneuver.
I suppose so. So I don't know. I
don't know the opposite, though, either.
Yeah. The mm-hmm. one thing I will say is that she's still hard on him, and she's still possessive of me and our time together. Mm. And I think what he and I thought was, oh, she's so eager to have a father there that she'll just, you know, embrace the whole thing.
Right.
But no, you know, she's still, and what I've read, read on it a lot. And, you know, as coming into a family, you cannot just take this sort of authoritarian role. You have to find that trust and friendship. And that can take time.
Right.
You know,
you can't just roll in as disciplinarian.
You cannot. Yeah. And so there's some of that teaching going on and just like knowing that you have to be slow and patient with it. And she's going to say things that hurt your feelings. Like, you know, she just wants me. You know, I'm still.
She's possessive. She just wants mommy.
Sometimes she
time.
Just wants me. And, you know, that makes so much sense, though.
That's got to make sense to
it
him.
It makes sense. And I think he understands that. And the great thing is that he is very well intentioned and is listening and is just working at it. Mm-hmm. And there are going to be tough moments where his feelings get hurt and he's learning how to deal with that. Mm-hmm. And I talk to her and she's learning how to, you know.
He doesn't have any kids.
No.
So this is his first experience.
Yeah.
And he's just going in deep.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like you're just thrown in full on. At least you had, you know, some time where they didn't know what you were doing or anything. You can
And I could make my errors. I have a lot more room for error.
Right.
And I'll continue to have a lot more room for error because now she's got weird.
You got her.
Yeah.
She trusts you.
She totally trusts me. So if I screw up, she's like next minute, like, oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. You screw up all the time. I do. You know, it's fine.
Right. I guess he'll know that he's really like made it when she just wants daddy daughter time without mommy there.
Right. And I think, you know, that might have to be moments where there's more of those, you know, like you have to actually start finding a little thing that the two of them do together.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a good,
right.
You know, like
find a thing, an activity.
Mm-hmm. Activity. One thing we all love are video games. So,
then you're set.
Yeah, we watch. He'll play, and we're both watching. And like, there's some really fun. I mean, I think it actually is a good bonding time. I know people are anti video game, but
well, it's not any of those like war video games, right?
No, no. There's some scary ones, but it's not violent. It's just really fun to watch. It's like watching a movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they're really good
games. Too realistic.
They're so realistic. But yeah, we have fun doing that together. But yeah, they'll find a thing, and I think that'll make it all even better. But it's all good now, so I don't have a lot to, I don't have complaints.
Mm-hmm. Do you think if everything keeps going well, maybe he'll adopt her?
He's already said he wants to do that. Right. I'm a little not sure.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of this too is I'm possessive of her, you know?
Right.
And I'm possessive of who I was too, which was, I was so proud to be like this single mom.
That seems like a decision that could wait, because that's a decision that has to do with somebody else too.
I don't think it would anymore, honestly.
You, what do you mean? She would make that decision?
Oh, you mean with her? I thought you meant like her father. I don't think his...
Oh, no.
But she would probably not quite understand what that means right now. So I wouldn't... I don't even... You know, I don't know. I don't see any reason to do it.
There's so many legal things. Like, what happens if it... If he does, and then you two don't work out, then he's...
Well, that's right. And then now do I have a struggle to keep her?
Right.
Like, that's, you know, that's where I'm uncomfortable. I don't... That's one thing I was happy I never have to deal with.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to do that. So, but we'll see if it makes sense, if it... If I really feel like we're there, you know, I don't know, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have a little... I have some... issues with that.
These are such adult things.
I know. Who knew I'd have to ever think about them?
do you, as a mother, do you realize like all of our parents were just winging it?
Well, now I know.
Right?
And, you know, sometimes I'm like, oh my God, they were much worse at this than me. At least I have Google to constantly check things on. I mean,
so true.
You know, then they didn't have people to just be like, oh, what do you do when, because they would be, you know, parents are too embarrassed to ask friends. They don't want to look like they're doing the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's talking. I mean, I assume, but I mean, maybe it was more communicative than I think, but...
Well, how would they get information before the internet?
You'd have to talk to people. Nobody wants to tell anyone your failings.
Right.
So you go on the internet, everybody's like blasting it out for everybody to hear.
Did you get a lot of judgment from other parents being a single mom?
No, actually, no. I think if anything... One, they don't address it. They act like it's not, everyone is too embarrassed to mention it. They don't want to upset me.
But are they talking behind your back?
I'm sure they're all like, well, what do you think? What do you think? What do you think?
Right.
You know, but never to me. And then there's only like two single mothers I know at this stage in their life. You know, they're all still young.
Right.
And the one, she adopted her son and she's raising him on her own. And we've talked about it and it was refreshing to actually talk, but we were both in a similar situation. And then another single mom who the dad's involved, but he lives in Mexico. So she, you know, she only sees him in the summer and for holidays. So she has a bit of that experience as well. Yeah. I mean, really, I just clung to the single moms I knew that had closer situations to me, but none of the married parents ever say anything. They don't want to offend me.
That's great. That's not what I was expecting.
No, yeah. Like, and I'm, you know, and a fancier part.
Thought it'd be like Mean Girls, but Mean Mommies or something.
I mean, if they are saying stuff, who knows? But I think if anything, they like that their kid knows a different kid.
Right.
That's in like a different situation. And, you know, they don't say a word.
So here's a callback for you.
Uh-huh.
So you were here in New York studying law. And when you got pregnant and when you gave birth, you moved back home to Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
And you just left New York?
I did.
For
10 months in total.
Oh, okay. Just for 10 months.
Yeah. I thought it was a year, but actually it was 10 months. I moved back when she was 10 months.
Why did you do that? Just did you feel like you had to give up on everything you were pursuing?
So what happened was I was in my third year of law school. I got pregnant. There was no way I was going to find a job with a belly.
Mm-hmm.
No one was finding jobs anyway. Like, it was very difficult to find jobs.
Right.
She was due right at the time the bar dates were to take the test for the bar. So I couldn't take the bar. And so I decided to wait until February. And then I was like, realistically, I'm not going to have a job. And I thought, well, I could move back to my mom's house for a little while so I can just be with the baby, not worry about paying for rent.
Right.
Just relax until I take the bar and then start looking for a job. And that's what I did.
That's what you did. What was it, relaxing being back home?
It was really isolating.
Yeah.
But I think I would have been isolated in New York and stressed about money.
Right.
So I don't regret doing that, actually. It was nice that I got to be with her and not be just like, oh my God, how do I make, you know, pay for this, all my, you know, whatever.
Right. And also have someone there that has some more experience.
Yeah. And it was nice to have a second person there where, like, if I just wanted to take a shower, she could be there or, mm-hmm. you know, she was very, my mother was really helpful. And the other sweet thing is my mom and my daughter are so close. And
right.
I feel like that really set, even though she was so tiny, that really set a foundation for them.
Right.
And she looks at my mom as like basically another, you know, mom in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Now they don't see each other like they used to, but they really have this very close relationship. And I think that helped lend to it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Was it a hard decision to make to move back to New York?
No, I was ready to get back to doing things. And my mom, and you know, she is flexible. So she can come stay with us or, you know, leave. So her grandparents are very much involved and helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard the first year being back and trying to figure out how to get back into everything.
What was the thing you missed most? Law school?
No, no. I wanted to do, I just started doing comedy and then had to quit. So I was dying to get back to doing that.
So surprised.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that funny? So I ended up doing law, but I didn't love it. And I was a family law attorney for a little while, but.
So you finished?
Yeah, I did. I just took the bar in February and passed. It was not that bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you're practicing law for a while.
Yeah, I still technically have a kind of legal job, but there's not. It's super flexible and soon will end, and I probably won't be doing anything legal anymore.
Why? You're not.
I should not need to, and I don't want to. So.
What do you mean you shouldn't need? You shouldn't need
financially.
To.
I soon won't need to,
mm-hmm.
and then I don't want to.
You didn't enjoy.
No, I don't like being in an office. It's just not for me.
Right.
I hate it.
Family law. So you're dealing with divorces and.
Yeah, so many emotions. That was not very fun, but it was. I mean, it was active and it was interesting. I mean, I wasn't bored, but I had to go to court. And that was very hard when my daughter was young because she was sick and I'd still have to go to court and I had to figure out how to, you know, juggle all that.
Right. Isn't that kind of ironic that you're dealing with divorced parents?
It was very enlightening. And the funny thing was, too, the person I worked for was a man. And so he represented a lot of men
mm-hmm.
in divorces and in child support cases. And it was nice for me to be on that side and to see what men were dealing with and mm-hmm. going through and their side of the stories and to be sensitive to that.
What were a couple of things that stuck out that surprised you?
A lot of women really, you know, they will really use men a lot, you know, just like they push the dads out of the family because they're mad at them but will rake them for all their money. And that's how they get back at them.
Right.
But they're not being nice to their kids by, you know, just excluding a dad that was fine.
Right.
You know, or trying to replace dads with new boyfriends and, you know, but still get that money.
Yeah. It must be hard. You see, like, when love turns to war.
Yes.
And how it just gets all out nasty.
It is very ugly what people do to each other. And there were a lot of bad dudes in that, too.
I'm sure.
So, it was nice to be, you know, to represent men who were very well-intentioned and, you know, just to keep that sensitivity. And, you know, but yeah, people get very, very emotional and ugly and they forget where they should be focused and...
Mm-hmm.
You know, poor kids.
You think that helps your current relationship of just like seeing that energy and knowing?
I think so very much. I hope to always keep that in mind so that like, you know, to remember, like to be just level headed as much as possible
mm-hmm.
when there's other people involved. And it's just ugly. Like, those fights could go on for years, by the way, just over little pieces of property.
Right.
Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. Is it about the property or
no,
is it just...
No, they don't want to stop. You know, there's still emotions there. So they're paying lawyers, though.
Right.
They're like, oh my goodness, you're wasting so much money. It's a chair.
This is like a very expensive public fight.
Yes. But it's worth it, I guess, until they get all that ugh out. I don't know. That's how their therapy in a weird way, maybe. Mm-hmm. Very bad kind, though. I don't know.
Does raising a child get easy? You said the first 2 years is really hard. Does it get easier?
So I think it's always... So it was harder in the first 2 years just because it's all your... It's you're most consumed by it, I think, in the first 2 years.
Right, because... Yeah.
They're so dependent on you. And it's hard to find yourself again. It takes like 2 years to get back to feeling like you again. That's my experience.
Right.
But it's beautiful too, because they're so cute and they're just little babies, and it's one. So it all balances. It's a constant balancing. So, you know, she's 8 now. The beauty of it is she's so independent, and she's, you know, she's in roller derby and she can go on sleepovers, and I can leave her, you know, she's fine. I can leave her unattended for short, you know, a half an hour or something, and I don't have to worry. She can call me, you know. The downside is, you know, I have to battle like technology now and like getting her to do chores. And like, so there's new sets of things that we have to work on, and just, you know, well, we have school to worry about, and we have to make sure to do these tasks. Like, you didn't have to worry about that at certain ages. None of that mattered. Yeah. So there's always a balancing.
Technology is a big, big new part of parenting.
Yeah. Yeah. And she likes to watch TV. She likes watching certain YouTube shows that I hate.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to like
kind Madge of... the Vag?
No, I wish. She actually likes it.
Does she? Okay.
She hasn't watched many of them, but
I'm sure the educational videos are a little over her head.
Yeah,
maybe.
But she thinks it's great. Uh-huh. She's in one of them. Where she's in an opening part. It's cute.
Have you shown her a lot of your character videos?
Yeah, she watches some, the ones that are appropriate enough for her to watch, or that I know will go over her head. I'm like, yeah, sure, you can watch it, and she loves that stuff.
What does she think? Does she think her mom's real wacky, or?
I think, you know, sometimes she'll be like, I don't think that was funny. Why did you show me this? Or she's such a critic. Or she just thinks it's, she's like, oh, I want to do that. I want to do, you know, she gets inspired by certain things. And
right. Who doesn't like to play dress up, right?
Yeah, it's fun. All the wigs and the fun costumes. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's inspiring in that way.
Some of it is obviously not, you know, it's not geared. If she's like, I don't like it, you're like, well, it's not geared towards you.
You won't get it is the problem.
You'll get it in 6 years or whatever.
Yeah, she's recommended jokes to me. She's like, you know what you should do? You should fart into the microphone. Right. People are going to love that. I'm like, no. I think so. Yeah. Nice suggestion. Yeah, she has her own idea of comedy.
Mm-hmm. So this Madge the Badge character is really taking off. Is it affecting, is it helping your stand-up? Is it? Kind of.
I think performance-wise, like, because I have to be, like, you know, perform for TV, you know, in a TV sort of, yeah, it's a web series, but I have to perform and on the spot and stuff like that, and, like, be bigger and have all this energy and stuff when I'm doing that character.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I think performance-wise, it's helpful. Mm-hmm. And just more improvisationally, and I do like to do more voices on stage now and just get into it in that way. So I do think it is helpful. I think everything lends.
I love how you answered that question, because I was thinking more in terms of like fans.
Oh.
And that was cool. That was super, super cool and revealing that you're like, oh yeah, it's helping artistically this way and that way.
Yeah. You know, as far as fans go, and it's interesting, most people don't know who I am. They don't put my name on it, but people have found me.
Mm-hmm.
And they're scattered though throughout. So I don't know.
Can't they list your name underneath?
They don't. Madge the Badge, like Playboy, Julie Katai.
Why?
I don't know. I think they don't want any. I don't think they want to start having to do it for everybody. If they do it for one, because they have all these other videos where it would just be probably a hassle. So
wait,
don't.
Do they own Madge the Badge, the character?
They do.
Oh, so if you took her on tour, it would be...
They would have to be included.
Right.
Yeah. So, but I don't know if I could even like gather a crowd or something just because, oh, Madge the Badge is performing. I don't think so. I don't know.
You never know.
Who's I guess that? You don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. All these YouTubers do it.
Yeah, they do. Mm-hmm. They are really...
In a big way.
I know. I would love to be. I mean, I wish they could be... I could make it more... Well, who knows? But I, again, then they might expect a certain type of comedian. So I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Now, from what I look, when I, the ones, the videos I looked at, mm-hmm. I didn't see you responding to any of the comments. Is that something that they tell you not to do?
Well, I am not. Yeah, they have some. Like, I think the producer will only respond to comments that maybe someone says, "Where are the?" Subtitles, I can't find them. So they'll respond to those, but they don't really respond to anything. Mm-hmm. So I don't, in the sense that I don't know that it would be the right thing for me to do, but I'll go through and like comments that I like.
Right.
So, only in the beginning, and then I stop looking.
Can you just like reply to every comment? Like, I'm Badge the Match. I'm Badge the Match.
I saw someone post my picture and like, no, she's a character. This is her right here. And they posted my picture and yeah. I was like, oh.
Did you get a lot more Facebook followers?
I will get friend requests and Instagram followers. Mm-hmm. And so... You can find out if you want to know. And I think people like to know that stuff. They like mm-hmm. to know who the person is behind the character and stuff.
Yeah. But... Well, it's also very educational.
Yeah.
It's like real education.
It is. It yeah. should be in high schools. Mm-hmm. You know?
Is that where we're at as a society? We have to be entertained
yeah.
for everything?
Absolutely.
We just can't like...
I think so. I mean, they even have TVs and taxi cabs. You have to be constantly entertained.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know any. It's a like our minds don't settle anymore.
Mm. Want to learn about your body? We'll do a song and dance while we teach you about your
yeah,
body.
Yeah. You know, we're not just going to tell you. We'll right. sing it.
We know you don't have the attention span. So
we'll dress up for you. Here's a drawing. Mm-hmm. Some graphic.
How often do the Madge the Badge videos come out?
Generally every 2 weeks. But sometimes there's variation with that. Mm-hmm.
Are you allowed to do another character on your own?
Yeah.
You have freedom to.
Yeah, I don't have. The only thing is I don't own that character. So I couldn't go out making money and or accepting, I think, you know, money from. I've had offers from people like a couch place. They were like, we would love for you to, you know, be in our commercial. And I was like, well, I can't just do it as my, you know, I can't accept that invitation. Mm. Anyway, nothing happened anyhow. But yeah, certain people want me to do the Madge thing, but I wouldn't be able to just agree to that on my own. It would have to be, yeah.
Right.
So that's not fun.
Yeah. You might have to wait several years like the Sprint Verizon guy.
Yes.
You know, just come
before
back.
Before I can just be Madge on my own.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know how long this will last, so maybe they'll let it go at a certain point.
Mm-hmm. You have contracts with them, I imagine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
time dated?
Yep. So we have a year here. We'll see.
Nice.
Yeah.
And you have a bunch of shows coming up, stand-up shows?
Yeah, what do I have coming? I have some things happening. Yes. I have stand-up, still doing the stand-up.
Mm-hmm. You have an album that just came out?
Yeah, Tiny Roommate. Mm-hmm. I decided to do it because I'm kind of in a new phase of life. So I was like, I should do the stuff that I did as a single mother.
Right.
You know, about my kid and like some of the very old jokes. And so that was what kind of pushed me to do it, to kind of memorialize it in a way.
Right. So your comedy album is... just that whole part of your life.
Yeah.
It's a record of that part of your
yeah,
life.
Yeah, that's how I look at it. Mm-hmm. And then we'll move on to a new phase. And I thought that would be kind of a fun way, not, you know, to do albums in my head anyway and not expect much of a return in any which way. But as an mm-hmm. artist, yeah. how would yes. I like to do this?
Yeah. yeah, you're making a record. It's a record of time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's see if I can go with a new, you know, 45 minutes to an hour.
Mm-hmm. So cool. I feel very inspired. And I hope anyone that hears this is maybe thinking of having a kid or has a kid or a couple.
Yeah, kids are great, man.
I mean, you've done so much. Lawyer, stand-up, album. You did a one-woman show all while raising a child.
That was fun. Yeah.
I'll put the link to your website.
Thank you.
In the show notes.
Yes.
And people should definitely come see you perform.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for doing it.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more.
Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.